welcome to another edition of Sight into Sound Presents. In this edition, we'll be talking with Ron Lucey, Executive Director of the Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities in Austin. I'm Max Mowdy. Ron will share with us his personal story about his visual disability and discuss the committee's work to assist Texans with disabilities. But before we begin our discussion with Ron, we are honored to have Governor Greg Abbott join us to introduce the committee to our listeners. As someone who has never let his disability be a roadblock to achieving many impressive goals, he is an inspiration to us all.
Hi, this is Texas Governor Greg Abbott. After the accident that left me paralyzed, I learned that we are not defined by our challenges. Instead, we define our lives by how we respond to those challenges. The Committee on People with Disabilities is helping Texans with disabilities respond to their challenges so that they can lead fulfilling and independent lives. Thank you to Ron Lucey and to the committee for their commitment to serving Texans with disabilities.
Ron, thank you very much for being here today. And my name is Max Mowdy. And we appreciate you taking the time today to meet with us.
Thank you for having me, Max.
I think that before we began the interview, we were talking about your background and your experiences with respect to disabilities and everything. Could you share with us a little bit of your background?
My experience with disability is both professional experience and a personal experience. In 1984, when I was a senior in high school, I experienced a rapid loss of vision, which left me legally blind due to an extremely rare type of visual condition called Leber's Hereditary Optic Neuropathy, or LHON. And so it was quite an experience growing up without a disability, and then just at that important transition age of going from high school to college. Going from being able to drive a car and you know, read and do all the things that other high school kids do to being legally blind. It's left me with peripheral vision, which is still a lot of useful vision, but no central vision. And as a result, I probably use a lot of the same assistive technology tools that your listeners use, the JAWS screen reader, Zoom text, low vision aids, that sort of thing. It's certainly been a bump in the road, but it's also opened up a lot of interesting paths in my life, things that I have had opportunities to do that I might otherwise not have been able to do.
Where did you go to high school?
Plano Senior High School. Go Wildcats.
And how big was Plano at that time?
Well, you know, Plano was actually, when we moved there in 1974, my dad worked for Xerox, and we moved from upstate New York to Texas, and Plano was mostly cow fields when we moved there, but it's just grown tremendously. And my graduating class at Plano Senior High School was 1,500 students. That campus was more like a community college than a high school campus. And I was very proud this year, the Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities, we had three reasons to go back to Collin County this year. We just got through holding our Lex Fridin Employment Awards in Plano, and we partnered with the city of Plano, and Mayor Harry Lazarurier, I struggled to pronounce his French name, but we're also hoping to establish a Mayor's Committee on People with Disabilities up in Plano. And we partnered with the Texas Workforce Commission on a higher ability campaign where we had a luncheon with about 120 North Texas employers up in Frisco, which is part of Collin County.
Yes.
And then the most interesting one for me was actually returning to my high school where we were partnering with Deaf Tech for a deaf employment initiative, helping deaf high school students in Plano go to work for a local photovoltaic company that provides some training to become an electrician or a solar panel installer. And that was actually held in Plano Senior High School Library, where I hadn't been for over 33 years.
Had it changed?
It had and it hadn't. I mean, I walked by my old locker, went by the old duck pond on the high school campus. It's very poignant and, you know, If you hadn't been to your high school in 33 years, you can imagine the memories that come rushing back. For me, it was both an emotional time and a challenging time for me going through that senior year of high school, losing vision, but still coming out ready to go to college.
Was the loss of your vision something that came on slowly?
The first time I noticed anything was wrong, we had a swimming pool in our housing development in Plano, and I'd just come back from the pool and was lying on the living room floor reading one of the many newspapers that my mom subscribed to, and for some reason I closed one eye and noticed that I was having trouble seeing out of the other eye. Informed my mom and recall going to an optometrist for glasses, and that didn't do anything, and they referred me to an ophthalmologist, and through a series of tests that couldn't do any good, and then they eventually sent me to a specialist, a neuro-ophthalmologist. But from that end of the summer of 84 to the first week of high school was probably less than a month, and went from 20/20 vision down to 21,000 vision, and a lot of medical tests. So it didn't seem instantaneous, but I would say it was rapid.
So what adjustments did you have to start making immediately after that happened to you?
And for your older listeners, they're going to remember this. Back in the 70s and early 80s, we didn't have the technology that we have today. And I remember getting recorded books from what was Recordings for the Blind back then, which is now Learning Ally, and also from the National Library Service Talking Book Program, the Texas State Library. And those came on those old four-track cassette tapes. It was different. The Library of Congress, in their sense of humor, they made those things nearly indestructible, but they also came in colors that made them look like something made by Fisher-Price rather than something that a high school kid would want to carry around in the 1980s, like a Sony Walkman or something like that. This is an interesting story. My dad, who worked for Xerox, had unlimited access to copy machines, and I was in the high school marching band, and you'll recall marching band music is about maybe 5 inches by 7 inches, and my dad kept enlarging the sheet music bigger and bigger. Until I think our first home game at Plano Senior High School, he had made it poster size, kind of the size of this table, and two of the flag girls on our band were holding it like a giant poster, and there was a line of trumpet players all lined up playing off of it. At some point, I didn't have the heart to tell my dad that it wasn't doing any good. It not only had to be big, but it had to be very close.
Very close, dude.
And so I learned to play by ear for the rest of the year with a lot of practice. Finally, the first piece of technology I was given was we had everything back then seemed to be by networking, and my parents knew somebody in our church that sold video magnifiers. Back then they called them CCTVs, closed circuit TVs. And it's essentially a board that's on an XY axis that has a track, and you put a piece of paper under there and the camera would magnify the print and blow it up on a old black and white cathode ray tube monitor. And that was really very useful to me. Things like that were not covered by insurance. My dad was pretty shocked to find out that, a prosthetic eye, if I lost an eye, that would have been covered by insurance, but some important assistive technology was not. And then I finally got hooked up with the Texas Commission for the Blind at the end of my senior year before going off to college. And many of your listeners are aware of the Chris Cole Rehabilitation Center here in Austin. And back in the summer of 85 when I graduated, they had a college prep program where blind or visually impaired high school graduates would go and take a freshman English class before going off to the fall semester, kind of get their feet wet on education and learn the skills of blindness. And for me, it was an opportunity to learn about public transportation, taking Capital Metro bus, be exposed to more technology that I didn't know. There was a blind girl in sixth grade who was in one of my classes in Plano, didn't interact with her a lot. When I was a senior in high school, there was another blind student on the east side. There were two high schools in Plano at that time. We talked over the phone, but meeting other young adults who were blind or had a vision impairment was actually a good opportunity to understand people were going through the same thing I did. And then that trajectory of that summer just launched me on to going to North Texas State University, now University of North Texas, my freshman year. But that little taste of Austin that summer of 85 made me want to come back, so I transferred at the end of my freshman year to the University of Texas at Austin. Got 2 degrees, one in government and one in communications.
So. And then you've been here in Austin since.
I love Plano, but Plano at the time didn't have public transportation. If you weren't going to drive, it was going to be hard to get around. And for me, living in a city that had a good paratransit system and a good public bus system and was pretty walkable. And when I first moved here, the cost of living was reasonable. Well, that's all changed now. Later in my career, I wanted to give back to Austin, so I served as a city commissioner and the chair of the Austin Mayor's Committee for People with Disabilities.
Yes.
And probably had the longest tenure as chair. I just didn't know when to quit. I'd served for the past 5 mayors, from Mayor Will Wynn up through Mayor Lee Leffingwell. And was recognized by the Governor's Committee with the Governor's Trophy before I became an employee here at the Governor's Committee for my service to the City of Austin.
And you came from the City of Austin to the state of Texas to working with the Governor's Office.
Well,
at that time,
the City of Austin work was volunteer work, but during that time, my career trajectory, while I was in college studying, I needed to make a few extra dollars, so I was working summer programs at the School for the Blind. Back in Plano, growing up, I worked in church daycares and child care programs. And, of course, growing up, I was a Boy Scout, so I was first aid trained and CPR trained. And so I worked at the School for the Blind. And then when I got out of college, I worked there for a few more years and supported employment as a job coach and worked in special education. And then a great job opened up for me at the Commission for the Blind. I've always been somebody who is interested in resources, community resources, finding solutions to problems. My brain just kind of works that way. And they had created a new position called the Consumer Resources Coordinator. A lot of that job was information and referral, and so I was able to apply for that job and get hired and build an information and referral computer system for the agency. Back then it was DOS computers. Before the internet, we had dial-up bulletin boards where you had your old 9600 baud modem. Before the Texas Workforce Commission, we had the Texas Employment Commission, and I trained agency staff how to help our consumers find jobs using their old bulletin board, governor's job bank, and things like that.
Now, the Texas Blind Commission for the Blind, that was a legacy.
It was, yeah.
To the existing department today.
Yeah, it's actually two legacies going back. In 2004, the Texas legislature took 4 state agencies, Early Childhood Intervention, the Texas Commission for the Deaf, the Texas Commission for the Blind, and the Texas Rehabilitation Commission, and merged them into one state agency called DARS, the Department of Assistive and Rehabilitative Services. And that agency was sunset in 2016, and some of its programs were transferred to the Health and Human Services Commission, and some of them, the biggest program, vocational rehabilitation, was transferred to the Texas Workforce Commission.
And with respect to the committee that you lead as executive director today, that committee, as I understand, has been around for many, many years. Could you bring us up to speed with respect to how you came to become part of the committee?
Sure.
Or the executive director of the committee? And then let's talk a little bit about what the committee is, who's there, the services they provide. And
Well, our committee has a very proud history. Our committee was formed by executive order in 1950 by Governor Allen Shivers. And if you think back to what was going on in our nation in 1950, it was 5 years after the end of World War II. Hundreds of thousands of Texans that served in World War II acquired a service-connected disability. And with the GI Bill, they were able to go to Texas College for free. Around 1950, a lot of those GIs were coming out of higher education and ready to enter the workforce. And so when Governor Allen Shivers created our committee, it was the Governor's Committee on the Employment of the Handicapped. And although our name has evolved over time, our great mission of supporting the employment of people with disabilities in the workforce has not changed. And so that was our original function, was to help Texans with disabilities enter the workforce. And I have, although I've only worked for the governor's committee since December of 2015. My job interview was right in this very room. I interviewed with Robert Allen, who was the deputy chief of staff. He's moved on now. So I competed for the job like anybody else. But I feel like all the jobs I had at DARS, I was their first accessibility coordinator. I managed a policy team, had a lot of different jobs, worked in medical field, doing medical rate setting. But also my work with the city of Austin as the mayor's committee chair specifically prepared me for this job. There's a statutory connection between the Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities and the local mayor's committees. It's kind of like a parent-child or grandparent-parent relationship. The mayor's committees take on the same issue areas that the Governor's Committee does. We work in the community on emergency preparedness and emergency management, accessibility in the built environment with sidewalks and curb ramps, accessible voting systems, making sure the city's infrastructure is accessible and that their services are, their parks programs serve everybody. Our libraries have assistive technology so that blind library patrons can access library services like anybody else. And those were the issues I worked on when I was with the city of Austin chairing the mayor's committee. So it was a great crosswalk to take that experience and take it to the governor's committee.
Does the committee work with cities other than Austin in the types of services and things that you're discussing? Accessibility,
absolutely.
Emergency preparedness.
Yeah, there's dozens of mayor's committees around the state that we work with. Some of them have their city commission, but they don't have the word mayor in their name. Three of them I'd like to mention. There's the mayor's office on people with disabilities in Houston. Maria Town is a contact for that. And we worked very closely with that committee during Hurricane Harvey response and recovery. And Ms. Charvin from San Antonio, who replaced Judy Babbitt, who had been in San Antonio for decades, is their city ADA coordinator. She's the ADA coordinator, but she's the staff liaison to the San Antonio Mayor's Committee. And we held our quarterly meeting in January of 2018 in San Antonio. On your contact sheet there, I have David Ondich, who's the ADA coordinator for the city of Austin. And the chair of the Austin Mayor's Committee now is Brian Owens, who is also Chair Ruth Hughes from the Texas Workforce Commission. Brian Owens is her chief of staff. We don't just draw a line at only working with mayor's committees. We work with all of Texas's disability stakeholder groups. I'll give you one small example. We get a lot of constituent contacts on service animal issues, emotional support animals and service animals, and people want to understand what the laws are and want to know where to go to turn if their civil rights have been violated. And so we, in addition to providing information and referral out of our office, created a working group, and the service animal working group has written a white paper that has some position statements in there and some recommendations for the legislature. And right now that white paper is working its way through general counsel and the governor's policy team. We hope to publish it in another month or so when the legislature begins. The participants on that group were the National Federation of the Blind of Texas, the American Council of the Blind of Texas, Disability Rights Texas, Coalition of Texans with Disabilities, the Texas Council on Developmental Disabilities, over a dozen groups, including a law enforcement officer who also trains service animals for veterans. And so one of our biggest strengths that I tell my staff is our ability to listen. And although I talk a lot, I can also listen. And often when people say, what's on the agenda of the Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities, I usually pause and say, well, that's up to you, because what ends up on our agenda is when disability stakeholder groups come and interact with us and talk to us. One of the reasons we hold our public meetings all over the state is because the biggest part of Texas is the part outside of Austin. And if we just stay here in Austin and listen to people with disabilities in Austin, it doesn't give us a realistic picture of what the experiences are of people with disabilities around the state.
Are those hearings open to anyone that wants to attend?
Absolutely.
And how can they find out about when and where those are going to be?
We always publish our meeting announcements on the Texas Register. In addition to that, we have a Gov delivery that gets emailed out to over 6,000 disability stakeholder groups and disability advocates. And people can contact us to sign up to get those email announcements.
I think maybe this is a good time. How could they contact you to get sure. to receive those?
I'm going to give you two ways for your listeners to contact us. The first is by email, and our email address is GCPD, Governor's Committee, People with Disabilities, at gov.texas.gov. That's gov.texas.gov. And the second is our main phone number, 512-463-5739.
Well, you know, as long as we're talking about phone numbers and contacts, I was looking at the list that you gave me with respect mm-hmm. to the mayor's office and the, who they could contact.
Most cities you can call 311, which is gets you to non-emergency city services. And generally, if you ask for a specific city department or a specific city employee, they can transfer you over there. Every city with at least 50 employees is supposed to have an Americans with Disabilities Act coordinator. And one of the other groups that we network with is municipalities, city and county ADA coordinators. And
yes.
We try to focus on one topic every month for those. One month we may do two webinars on service animals. Another month we'll invite Texas Parks and Wildlife Department to talk about accessible parks and recreation programs and grants for cities and counties to make their parks programs accessible. There's a training link on our website. So if they go to gov.texas.gov/disabilities, they can find our division's website on the governor's main webpage and then go to the training link. And they can find links to the different webinars that we do.
It sounds like that there is a lot of support and network among the various support groups. And I think that if someone wants to tap into that network, there is a lot of information.
I've always told my staff and the committee that the taxpayers shouldn't have to pay to solve the same problem more than once. And if we can learn, if our communities can learn from each other and their accessibility and disability best practices, that is a shortcut to solving those problems. In the same way, the Texas Governor's Committee on People with Disabilities is tied into a National Association of Governor's Committees. And so I have peers in not all 50 states. There's a couple of states that don't have a governor's committee, but I'm tied into a large network of over 48 committees, including some in the territories of the Virgin Islands, and we share information, and we also ask each other for resources. The Governor's Committee, we can do studies, we can do research, we can provide information and referral, and we can set the table for people with disabilities to approach their legislature and talk about the change that they want. But once the legislature comes into session, I can be a resource witness, but I can't go to a state senator or a representative and say, hey, you should pass this bill or you should not pass that bill. We must be very neutral when it comes to legislation. But we can provide the information so that advocates know what the policy challenges are and also yes. know what the opportunities are. And then they can solicit their government for the kind of change that they need.
What do you see coming up in the next session?
Talking to the American Council of the Blind, they have some changes they'd like to see on accessible voting, and so that's being queued up in our biennial policy report, specifically trying to find a way to make absentee balloting accessible. Right now, each jurisdiction, your county that has a DRE, electronic voting system, they have to have at least one in every precinct that's accessible. Early in my career, I served on the Secretary of State's Accessible Voting Task Force that wrote the regulations for accessible voting and even had the privilege of serving in Travis County on their election study group to pick the voting system that we use here in Travis County that's also used in Harris County. That equipment is getting very old, though. It's now 18 years old, and many counties are looking at the next generation of accessible voting systems. But also, how can we allow a person who's blind to cast a secret ballot independently, even when it comes to doing an absentee ballot.
Is that a matter of a law involved in that, or is that a matter of more mechanics? And
there are rules in our election code that may need to be modified to prescribe that the early voting or absentee voting, not early voting, but absentee voting must be delivered using an accessible method. But there are already laws on the books that imply that that's required, including Title II of the Americans with Disabilities Act. The Secretary of State would say that each county is responsible for their own voting systems, and that's true, but there's also the opportunity for leadership to provide examples of solutions. Another group that falls into your listening audience, in Texas there's approximately 2,500 deafblind Texans. Leading cause of deafblindness is Usher syndrome. It's not a huge population, but it's a population that doesn't have a lot of programs and resources to help them. There is a Medicaid waiver for deafblindness that can provide some assistance, but you have to have three disabilities: deafness, blindness, and an intellectual disability. But for people who are deafblind without that third disability, they lack the assistance to independently go shopping or read their mail or attend a funeral or a public meeting. Over a year ago, we did another white paper study on support service providers for people who are deafblind, and we looked at those programs in all 50 states and came up with a modest proposal that would assist those approximately 2,500 deafblind Texans with some a basic level of support service providers. And these are people that are both trained in tactile American Sign Language and sighted guide and pro-tactile interpretation, where they will describe the environment. For example, the room that we're in, they would let the person who's deafblind know that there's a podium behind me with the American flag on the left and the Texas flag on the right, and a large conference table going down the center, and then they would begin to tell the person who's in the room. And that allows that individual to know what's in their environment and better participate in that meeting.
You know, Ron, I think we really appreciate you being here today and visiting with us. You're not only a wealth of information, but, I mean, you're there. You've been there where our listeners are. And so there's a unique understanding of the concerns and the problems and what everyone needs, the visually disabled and others, the support that they need. And it sounds like that the committee is doing absolutely everything it can to provide the support here, certainly in Texas, and it sounds like other places in your network with respect to helping everyone in every respect. And what we're trying to do is just get the word out.
Yeah. Well, Governor Greg Abbott has picked 12 outstanding members of our committee, and we're very grateful. It's a diverse group. At least 7 of those 12 members must be an individual with a disability. Your listening audience, if they're interested in serving on Texas boards and commissions, our committee is just one of at least half a dozen at the state level that address disability issues. Frankly, we need more qualified Texans with disabilities serving on boards and commissions. So there's an appointments link on the governor's website. Putting in your application is no guarantee that you'll get selected or appointed. There's got to be an opening, but I always encourage interested, motivated, and talented Texans with disabilities to serve their state through voluntary service.
Well, that's very interesting to know, and I'm sure that, you know, some of the folks that are listening today would be very interested in volunteering and becoming involved.
Not all municipalities have a mayor's committee on people with disabilities, but they may have a transit board that makes policy on public transportation to make sure that it's accessible. They may have a parks and recreation board. So people with disabilities need to be at the table advocating for the type of inclusive community and accessible community that they want to live in.
We would like to sincerely thank Governor Greg Abbott for his introduction to his Committee on People with Disabilities, and thank Ron Lucey for taking the time from his very busy schedule to share his personal story and providing us with such valuable information about the committee. If you want to contact the committee, call 512-463-2000. Again, that number is area code 512 800-463-2000. Also, if you would like a CD copy of this show or would like to just hear it again, you can click on the podcast page at sightintosound.org. Sight Into Sound Presents is a production of Sight Into Sound Radio. Your producer is Jim Martinez. I'm Max Mowdy.